This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Episode 292. The boy just doesn't know when to quit. It's a beautiful day today. Wow. Beautiful weather today. I'm taking in my car tomorrow, because when I turn and go slow, you can kind of hear a in the front end, and I've been noticing a little smelling of a little bit of antifreeze, so I may just have them replace the hoses and, you know, kind of give it a general check over. When I called the lady and told her what kind of car I had, a Chevy Prism 1999. She said, "How many miles you got on it?" And I said, 162,000. She said, "Oh, it's just a baby, or it's just broken in." If I understood her correctly, she's got one that's got 250,000 miles on it. So I'm thinking, if this car holds up, I'm driving this car to 250,000. Just going to keep driving this car till it just falls apart. I love this little car. Gets me around. And now that I bought it for $300, since it got bashed in the back end. Oh, I gotta go. Yeah, that's coming up. Not this week, but next week. Gotta go down to court. Sit there and testify up against the poor little kid who just wasn't watching where he was going. Got a summons. Have to appear for the prosecution. Anyways. All the leaves are turning now, or have turned. The trees are gorgeous. It's good. Things are puttering along with the writing. I've felt a little combobulated this week. I just haven't quite settled into the slot yet. Last week was okay, after coming back from, or week before last, I don't know, coming back from vacation, it was good, it was fine. This week, I just don't feel like I've hit my stride. But sometimes when I get to this point in the book, I'm just like, wrap it up! Finish it! When I actually go back and do my first reread, usually I do my first reread and I go, oh, well, that wasn't so bad. It usually works out fine. It's just I'm kind of in that spot where I'm ready to be heading for the home stretch, and I still have, you know, more innings to play. So I'm really hoping that guy is going to stop. Good. Okay, good. Yay. No accidents today. So that's been good. Had some nice meals today with friends. Got together with a friend on Monday morning. We had a great talk. And then Tuesday morning, we had a great talk. And then Tuesday evening, had a great talk. My buddy, who I have sporadically been talking to on Wednesdays, was actually out of town. And I don't have anything on Thursday, so that pretty much wraps the week. Going to be having family breakfast this Saturday down at my kids. So that's always fun. All in all, everything is puttering along, and it's good. It's just good. Today, I read this article several weeks ago, and I kind of read it and went, eh. You know? But then, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, oh, well, you know, there is an application here. And the last quote, I think it's by Bertrand Russell, at the end, kind of fits into my application. So, maybe we'll talk about that. The name of the article was Doubt as a Sign of Faith. It's by Julia Baird. And, you know, it had some interesting stuff in it. She starts out by saying, certainty is so often overrated. She said, when the Most Reverend Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, recently said that at times he questioned if God was really there, much of the reaction was predictably juvenile. Colon, even God's earthly emissary isn't sure if the whole thing is made up. And of course, you know, a lot of the atheists had a lot of big quotes like, atheism is on the rise and it appears that even those at the top of the church are beginning to have doubts. She said, despite the alarm, the Archbishop's remarks were rather tame. He told an audience at Bristol Cathedral that there were moments when he wondered, is there a God? Where is God? When asked specifically if he harbored doubts, he responded, it really is a good question. The other day I was praying over something as I was running, and I ended up saying to God, look, this is all very well, but isn't it about time you did something if you're there? Which is probably not what the Archbishop of Canterbury should say. So, of course, this provoked several reactions. One of them was from the London-based scholar, a Muslim scholar. I'm not even going to try his name. Went straight to Twitter. I cannot believe this. The Austrian atheist Peter Fitzsimmons tweeted, victory! The Daily Show account joked, Archbishop of Canterbury admits doubts about existence of God. Adds, but atheism doesn't pay the bills, so, you know, blah, 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 blah. According to the writer of the article, though, the Archbishop's candor, as she puts it, only makes him human. He may lead 80 million Anglicans worldwide, but he is also a man who knows anguish, rage, incomprehension, and the cold bareness of grief. She goes on to talk about the fact that he lost his firstborn child, a 7-month-old baby, in a car accident in 1983. It was a period that he had described as utter agony. As a teenager, he cared for an alcoholic father. While explaining his thoughts on doubt, he referred to the mournful Psalm 88, which describes the despair of a man who has lost all his friends and cried out, why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? The psalm bleakly reads, darkness is my closest friend. Okay. So, you know, according to the writer of the article, faith cannot block out darkness or doubt. When on the cross, Jesus did not cry out, here I come, but my God, why have you forsaken me? She also notes that his disciples brimmed with doubts and misgivings, and then makes the statement that just as courage is persisting in the face of fear, so faith is persisting in the presence of doubt. According to her, doubt acknowledges our limitation and confirms or challenges fundamental beliefs, and is not a detractor of belief, but a crucial part of it. Okay. I'm passing a cemetery right now, and they always have gorgeous trees. There's lots of sugar maples, lots of beautiful oaks in there, and pretty trees this year. Beautiful, beautiful. It's kind of a shame, because back in 2007... there was an ice storm that went through, and it really ripped up the trees in the cemetery. And even though they're gorgeous, you know, my brain still goes back to the way it was prior to 7 years ago, where there'd be these big, full trees, and they would go flame reds and oranges, and it was just like, wow! They're a little thinned out now, but they're still very, very pretty. Sorry, detour. I just looked up and saw the cemetery, and it's gorgeous. Anyways. So then she also goes on, you know, to talk about Christian writers like Calvin and C.S. Lewis, who have acknowledged times of uncertainty. She said the Southern writer Flannery O'Connell said, there was no greater suffering than what is caused by the doubts of those who want to believe. But for her, these torments were the process by which faith deepened. And something I didn't know, she goes on to quote Mother Teresa, that in 1953 she wrote, "Please pray specifically for me, that I may not spoil his work, that our Lord may show himself, for there is such terrible darkness within me, as if everything was dead. It has been like this, more or less, from the time I started the work." So, you know, she says, and yet, by this work, Mother Teresa helped thousands of people. And it's not always torment. Some live quite contentedly with a patchwork of doubt. Who can possibly hope to understand everything and to have exhaustively investigated all areas of uncertainty? She also quotes from Ben Franklin, and I thought this was interesting, that Ben Franklin wrote that he thought the system of morals and the religion that Jesus of Nazareth were the best the world ever saw. Though Franklin said he had all along with most of the present dissenters in England some doubts as to Jesus' divinity. Though it is a question I do not dogmatize on, have never studied it, and think it is needless to busy myself with it now, when I expect soon an opportunity of knowing the truth with less trouble. So, basically he's saying, you know, I spend all this time investigating whether Jesus was divine or not, but at my stage of life, I'm going to find out one way or another pretty quickly. Which I think is, you know, that's pretty good. The author of the article called this a logical pragmatism, which I like that. She also mentions that her own pastor, which she described as a Baptist, whose ocean swimming prowess has lassoed scores of surfers and swimmers into his church, puts it simply. He said, "For Welby, myself, and many others, it is not that we have certainty, but have seen the plausibility of faith and positive impact it can make. In a broken world, that can be enough." Which is an interesting viewpoint as well. And then she goes on to say, "While certainty frequently calcifies into rigidity, intolerance, and self-righteousness, doubts can deepen, clarify, and explain." That's actually close to what my comments would be on this. This is, of course, a subject far broader than belief in God. So here's the quote from Bertrand Russell that I thought, ooh, that's pretty good. The philosopher Bertrand Russell put it best. "The whole problem with the world," he wrote, "is that," sorry for the language, "but the stupid are cocksure, while the intelligent are full of doubts." Okay. And she concludes in a very cute way by saying, "Of that, at least, we can be certain. I'm pretty sure, anyways." So this function of doubt and function of certainty, you know, really, if we break it all down and we use our one hammer that we have, flesh and spirit, and see what kind of a nail we can pound in this, it occurred to me when I was thinking about this article that there is an application of flesh and spirit here. Because doubts are a function of flesh. I firmly believe that if we did not have flesh, and someone told us, look around at the creation around you, isn't it beautiful? Obviously, there's a designer. We would look around and go, yeah, there must be a designer, because look at how beautiful everything is. How would I have this concept of beauty without there being something that created me to appreciate this beauty, who then created things that were beautiful so I would have something to appreciate? Because it's a very simple path to trail down. And it's really only within the context of flesh that we find something that is questioning that. That is saying, well, but, you know, maybe there isn't anything out there. Maybe you're making a fool of yourself. Maybe this, maybe that, maybe. You know, it's only idiots would believe that. And so for the people that have doubts, what they're really struggling with is the contention of their faith attempting to cause them to question. It is that struggle of flesh that is trying to introduce doubt to get them to mull on it over and over and over and obsess on it until it does bring destruction in their life. Which means that the flesh realizes that there is a potential to cause destruction in their life by introducing doubts, and so it introduces doubts. When you get to the point where the flesh believes it can cause more destruction in your life by introducing certainty over doubt, then it will push certainty. So if it has you convinced of something that is going to lead you to destruction more than it's going to lead you to life, then it will get behind that thing and say, oh yeah, that's what you should do. That's right. Atheism is good. There's no God out there. Of course there's no God. You can be certain of that. You know, okay. So I would expect to find atheists who are a lot more brittle, a lot more self-righteous, a lot more believing and certain of the fact, and vociferous in their explanations of that, and strident in their claims of atheism, then I would expect to find people of religious faith. Now, where you will find people of religious faith who are certain are the ones that have adopted a religious faith that is so vitriolic, that is so close-minded, that it's doing a fabulous job of leading them to destruction even without any doubts. And so the flesh goes, whoa, that's working good. Since that's working good and they're offending basically everyone around them, since it's causing them to be so bitter and angry at everyone around them, we really do not want, at this point in their life, to do anything to jostle that, because we want that bitterness and that root of anger and that way of offending everyone around them. I'm getting my mail, one moment. To just continue until we get to some point in the future when it's going to be the right point to try to flip this thing. And then we'll flip it and hammer it hard from the other side. And the person will be so rigid and so close-minded that if you can crack it open at that point, everything will come apart. So I think Bertrand Russell is onto something when he said that there's a certain class of people. Hang on. Trying to get back to the quote. Quote, so I don't miss the quote. There's a certain class of people that are cocksure, and there's others who are full of doubts. Now, again, if the flesh can get such traction with doubt that can drive you insane, then it's going to do that too. So if you're just consumed by doubt, the flesh will keep pounding you with doubt if it's getting traction on it. But if it can't get traction by making you close-minded because of certainty, and it can't get traction because of consuming you with doubt, then it's just going to sit there and do whatever it can do. And that's just keep nibbling on you. You know, every day. Oh, you know, she'll believe that. Oh, yeah. And about the only time you're going to get free of that is when you have enough experiences with him and you have a deep enough relationship with him that you've seen so much of what he's done that the idea of his existence explains so much in your life that the idea of his non-existence just seems completely implausible. But there's always a little thing over there that, okay, well, maybe. But it's like I tell my buddies when we talk about this kind of stuff, you know, I have gained such benefit in having a relationship with him that I really don't need him to be there at the end of my life. If someone would somehow convince me that it was all just an illusion, it was all just a simulation, and that at the end of it there really isn't a God and we're just going to wink out, I'd say, you know what, that's okay, because I really don't see that I've missed anything important by not believing in God. I mean, it's good. I would do the stuff that I've done all over again. There are no earthly delights that I could have enjoyed if I just didn't believe in a God. Because I've seen where that stuff leads, and it leads to destruction. And so my life right now is actually filled enough with life that I wouldn't choose another path if someone could somehow convince me that there was no God. But honestly, convincing me at this point that there is no God, that there is no one who is whispering to me at a daily basis, that would be like someone trying to convince me that I don't have a daughter because I have a relationship with her. And I'm just amazed as I go through the day how things work out. You know, even though sometimes flesh is going, oh, hey, this is the wrong thing to do, you're making mistakes, make. But it's like, no, I really feel like this is the... And then it gets through and ta-da, you know, it all works out, ta-da. So it's good. And I just understand that whatever little doubts I have, whatever nibbling I get from uncertainty, that's just all part of the challenge. You know, I know that's coming from my flesh. I know it's not going to let up until I die. But even knowing all that, I'm going to stay the course because it has benefits here. And I really do firmly believe it'll have benefits there. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.